And now it's time for Rod and Reel Radio with your hosts, Hopalong John Cassidy, fresh and saltwater expert angler Stan Vanderberg, and all-around outdoors fishing and hunting enthusiast Wendy Toshihara. If you love the outdoors, enjoy salt or freshwater fishing, this is the show for you. We'll cover most all of the fishing tournaments and events with special reports while providing you with the information you need as to how and where to experience the best fishing opportunities in Southern California, Baja, Alaska, or just about anywhere the fish are biting. We have some fantastic guests and reports lined up for you this evening, so sit back, relax, and get ready for the fastest 2 hours in radio. It's all right here, right now, on Rod and Reel Radio, the best stop on your radio dial for all the information you need for fishing opportunities all over the United States. Now here's your host, Hopalong John Cassidy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Rod and Reel Radio. I am not your underfished host, John Cassidy. I am the local producer, Ben Harvey. Due to some unforeseen circumstances, we won't be able to be live tonight, so John asked me to put together a compilation of some of the best interviews over the past few months. So tonight, we will have guests including Butch Brown talking about his swim baits, Captain David Hayworth, and we will be leading off with Jim McElveen. So, without any further ado, John, take it away.
Hey, guys, let's go to our first guest. You know, Stan had been kind enough to contact these people because he was having some battery issues. And he got a lot of great information. And in talking over the week, we said, hey, let's get the guys from Optima Batteries on. So we do have with us, he is the EK man. Wow. The e-care manager for Optima Batteries, Mr. Jim McElveen. And Jim, you got to pardon me because I'm screwing up your last name. How do you pronounce it?
It's pronounced Optima Jim, and then you don't even have to worry about the last name. It's McElveen.
McElveen. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, welcome to the show. And I know Stan has a slew of questions for you, but I want you to just, first of all, tell us a little bit about Optimum, and then you have different products that are available, and they are differentiated by different colors of tops on them. So start off and tell us a little bit about Optimum, and then I'll let Stan have his questions for you, because I know he's got maybe some more technical ones. So, Jim, take it away.
Okay, so Optimum batteries are absorbed glass mat lead acid batteries, otherwise known as AGM batteries, and not to be confused with gel batteries, which I've been doing this a while. The next gel battery I see in a car or a boat will be the first. Just typically don't see gel batteries in cars and boats. They're mainly in standalone power applications, but they're commonly confused with AGM batteries because of the G in absorbed glass mat. But these batteries, especially ours, are made from 99.99% pure virgin lead. Most car batteries on the road today and boats are made from recycled lead, which corrodes faster, doesn't work as well, doesn't last as long. Our batteries are spill-proof, they're sealed, and they're up to 15 times more resistant to vibration than a typical flooded lead-acid battery. I call those black box batteries, which is what most folks can have in their cars, trucks, and their boats. And that's especially important, not just when you're on the water, but when you think about the suspension system in your boat trailer. There's really not much to it. So you go over railroad tracks or bumpy roads, or your boat's bouncing around quite a bit, and it really makes a difference to have a battery that is very resistant to damage from vibration, because that can catch up with you in a hurry, especially if you live in a warmer climate. And I have to say, tonight, you guys in Southern California and us in Central Florida, we're about the two warmest places in the country. Everywhere else is freezing cold, especially the Midwest area. My friends in Nebraska, where we run the open road races, they're going to go down to minus 26 tonight. So if anybody is headed into those areas, I would strongly encourage you to fully charge your car battery with a battery charger. That's the best thing you can do to maximize battery performance and lifespan. Even if you're not headed into those areas, it's a great idea no matter what kind of battery you're using. Even once a month, just plug it in overnight, top the battery off, make sure you've got good voltage in your battery. That'll maximize performance and lifespan.
All right. Jim, Optima makes several different types of batteries, but I know you have four types that you make for the regular people like us out here traveling around in the real world. They are differentiated by different color tops. Can you tell us just quickly a little about them?
Sure. So the red tops are your basic starting batteries, and that's a daily driven vehicle. It could be a pickup truck, a car you commute with, and those work great in those applications. The yellow tops are both starting and deep cycle use, and you'll find those in vehicles that are maybe a little more demanding from an electrical perspective, Jeeps with winches, any vehicle that has start-stop technology, and that's the technology that shuts your engine off when you come to a complete stop at a stoplight, kind of like those gas-powered golf carts that shut off and then turn back on when the accelerator gets pressed. Those start thousands of times more than a typical internal combustion engine. And so you're going to need a battery that can handle much higher electrical demands from the starting perspective. So the yellow tops are great in those applications. Then we have blue top batteries, which are designed and intended for marine and RV use. And they have both the traditional SAE terminals, the thick lead terminals. They also have the threaded terminals that you can put the eyelets on and clamp or screw those down to the base where you can connect your trolling motors or your RV components and things like that. So red, yellow, and blue are three different types of batteries.
All right. Stan, why don't you – I know that you had had some conversations with Jim, and one of the reasons why we have him aboard, even though we've had Jim with us several years in the past. So why don't you start the questioning with Jim with that with the questions you have?
Well, one of the things, you know, I'd call Jim because I've been with Optimum Batteries for ages now, just because they work so doggone well. I mean, they're very, very dependable. They charge up faster than other batteries, and they last longer. And with all of the new systems that are involved with bass fishing now, where you've got, you know, it used to be just a locator on the front, locator on the back. Well, now you've got, you know, two 12-inch locators on the back that pull GPS from both sides. You've got size and side scan. Now you've got the front locators where you, instead of having, you know, one little one, you got maybe two. Some of these guys have got two 16-inch, you know, TV screens on the front that are pulling power. You know, the live scan now is a big deal, and that pulls more power than it did before. So the standard 800 cranking amps of a battery is getting drained left and right. And so I had called Jim and asked him the questions about, hey, what do we do and what do we need for today's bass fishing and the guys that are out there? And lithium, you know, was this big deal. All right, we can get lithium batteries. But the problem is you don't want all lithium in a boat. And I want Jim to explain all of this too and what the options are now and what guys are looking at.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting you mentioned lithium. We had the MLF college tournament in on Friday. I live on the Harris Chain in Florida. So I see anglers in my backyard every day. I talk to them about the batteries in their boat, ask them what they're using. And then we had the high school tournament anglers in on Saturday. And I met a father and son from Oklahoma. They trailered over here about 17 hours, had their boat in the water, and they were using lithium batteries in their boat. And I give them all my phone number in case they have trouble during the week. They can give me a call. And I'll be darned if I didn't get a call from these guys Friday night. And nobody ever calls during business hours. They're always calling, and these guys have to be calling as they were running their trolling motor to get them back to the dock because they had a lithium starting battery, which is a little unusual, and that battery failed them. It was the second lithium failure they had with that company, and they were nervous that they were not going to be able to get going in the tournament the next day if they couldn't get their hands on a battery. So they were going to get back to the dock late because they were on trolling motor batteries, and I had them come over, and I met them and got them one of our blue top batteries. But one of the challenges that the lithium guys have, now lithium batteries are really expensive, but they're very lightweight, and they offer a lot of cyclability, and it's, you know, it's a great technology if you can afford it. And these guys got a deal on their batteries, as most of the anglers do that get the lithium batteries, because it's, you know, the cranking battery, I think they got a deal, and they still paid over $1,000 just for one battery. But a lot of people look at cold cranking amps. And that's not what you want to look at when you're fishing in terms of outfitting your boat. You want to look at reserve capacity or amp hours, which is kind of the size of your electrical gas tank, to give you an analogy. And the more amp hours you have, the more time you're going to be able to spend pulling energy out of that battery, whether it's for live wells or monitors or trolling motors, whatever. So you know, cold cranking amps is measured at 0 degrees. Nobody's going to put their water or their boat in the water at 0 degrees. So that's a okay indicator, and you'll get outboard manufacturers that will give you a specific recommendation for marine cranking amps. Like they want at least 1,000 marine cranking amps to start that engine. That's a measurement that's done at 32 degrees. So that's a little bit more accurate of a representation. A battery that might produce 800 cold cranking amps might produce 1,000 marine cranking amps because it's a warmer temperature. It's a little easier to deliver the current. But it's those amp hours and the reserve capacity of a battery that will give you an apples-to-apples comparison between different battery sizes, different battery brands. And you want to make sure that your battery is designed for deep cycle use. If you're going to use it in a deep cycle application, to be quite honest, just about everything in fishing these days is deep cycle, even the starting, because most anglers will have their trolling motor batteries isolated, and they'll have maybe a 36-volt system with three 12-volt batteries, and then they'll have their starting battery. But it's not just their starting battery. You know, as Stan mentioned, it runs a lot of other stuff. So it's really a deep cycle application, and so you need a battery designed for starting and deep cycle use. So I was able to get these guys from Oklahoma set up with one of our Group 31 batteries. It worked great for them on their tournament. They finished 18th. They didn't win, but you know, it's a terrible thing to go 17, 18 hours and face the prospect of not even being able to compete in the tournament that you went all that way for. So I was glad we were able to help them out. But you want to look at those amp hours and see the size of the battery in terms of the capacity of energy that it can hold and deliver over time.
Jim, we've got to take a break right now. Can I ask you to stay with us for a little bit longer? Because I know we have a ton of questions that we'd like to ask you.
Absolutely.
Hey, we're speaking with Jim McElvain. He is with Barrett Batteries. He is the air e-care manager over there. He's the guy with the answer. Stan, Wendy, and I will be back after these messages with more questions for our guest.
Hi, Roland Martin here. I'd like to tell you a little about Gary Yamamoto and the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company. It all started with an idea, then a dream, and in 1983, the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company was formed. If you know Gary Yamamoto like I do, and I've known him since 1983, you know he has a passionate love for the sport of fishing. That love is only matched by his obsession to design and produce the highest quality soft-plastic fishing lures on the market today. Every bait Gary makes is inspected by hand. Today, more than 2.5 million packages of bait are shipped worldwide. On behalf of Gary and his staff, he wants to thank his customers for thinking so highly of his products and wishing you the great success of the sport of fishing. Whether you fish for fun or fish the tournament circuits like I do, you'll honor Gary for making Gary Yamamoto Custom Baits a key part of your fishing experience. Take it from me, Roland Martin. When I'm in need of a go-to bait, my first choice is a Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one fishing, hunting, and shooting sports retailer, now has 28 locations. Turner's is your one-stop shop for fishing tackle, hunting gear, and everything for shooting sports. Turner's offers a full selection and unmatched prices on the gear you need. Whether you're planning a fishing trip with the family or chasing giant tuna, Turner's highly skilled staff will make sure you have the gear for your next adventure. Visit Turners.com to find a Turner store near you, and be sure to join the Turner's Discount Club to get weekly ads and specials right to your inbox. Turner's Outdoorsman, your one-stop shop for all your fishing needs.
We all like to travel, whether it's for business or it's pleasure. But one thing we all like to do, it's save money. Well, we got a travel tip for you. Bill Boyce has put together a travel website for you that can save you a lot of money. You can become your own travel agent. The site is bookwithboyce.com. You're going to save yourself 5 to 35% on all nationally advertised travel rates. You want to go to Mexico? You want to go to Hawaii? Bookwithboyce.com can offer you outstanding prices. And here's the deal. There's no surprises for accommodations, rental cars, or activities. So try bookwithboyce.com now and thank Bill Boyce later on.
Hi, this is Lori Heath. You may know me from some of the fishing boats out of San Diego. I want to talk to you about something that's really close to my heart. Did you know that when you donate blood, you're not only helping others, you're also helping yourself? Donating blood lowers the risk of heart attacks in men by more than 70%, lowers the risk of developing cancer, and helps you maintain a healthy liver. So donate blood. to help someone else and to help yourself. If you can't donate, you can still make a difference with the financial gift. It's the best way to give back. Hook, line, and sinker. And for more information and to make a financial donation or an appointment, visit sandiegobloodbank.org. That's the sandiegobloodbank.org. And just to let you know, I'm also a blood donor.
I always wear a life jacket when I'm on the water because I'm lazy. I like floating like a giant turtle covered with SPF 50. The life jacket does the work. I highly recommend this to everyone. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we want to welcome you back to Rod and Reel Radio. We are speaking with Jim McElvain. He is the eCare manager for Optima Batteries. He's calling us out of Florida. And, Jim, thank you for taking the time to be with us, sir.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Hey, it's so great.
One of the things that when I was talking to Jim, because I found that, you know, on your crank battery, when you start adding, like I've got the new Ghost trolling motor, well, it's got GPS in it and it's pulling power. You've got your down scan, it's pulling power. You've got your standard locators and sonars and they're pulling power. So you've got your live wells, you've got your lights, and everything is run off your starter battery, not your trolling motor batteries. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, I mean, I run the bigger trolling motor batteries that Optima provides. And when you start draining your system down on your starter batteries, you'll turn the thing over and all of a sudden your locators will go off. That's a clue they need to drive it more, put in a little charge on your battery. Or the option is to have a little bit higher cranking amp than one of the better, bigger batteries on your starter battery rather than some of the lower ones. And there's several different versions, a 17, a 21, these are different, and a group 31, a bigger battery. But if you're the guys that are running lithium, if you try to run a lithium starter battery, problem is with that, it's just like your lithium flashlight. It'll go until it quits. And when it quits, there's no restarting that bad boy. You have to recharge it. You have to have the right charger, and you can't just jump them. So most of the guys out there that are running, if they're running lithium on their trolling motors, and there's some options even on that I'm not real fond of yet, let's put it that way. But, you know, you've got to have a regular starter battery that runs your boat efficiently and will last. Mm-hmm. And from my humble opinion of the Optima batteries last better than any other on the market. You can, if you're buying a boat and you want longevity out of your batteries and you want to be able to charge them and go, charge them and go, charge them and go, these things will last forever. I'm not quite forever, but they last for years. Yeah. And you need that dependability. But
yeah, Jim, I've always run the deep cycle batteries for both my starters and my ancillary power needs. Is that a good thing to do or not really?
You know, whether it's an automotive marine application, if you meet the cranking amp requirements, whether it's coal cranking amps or marine cranking amps of the engine, that's what you need to check off the list. And once you've achieved that, if you can do that with a deep cycle or a dual purpose starting deep cycle battery, you're in great shape. But I'll be honest with you, battery manufacturers and battery brands have really done a disservice to consumers for decades in how they have promoted and advertised batteries. And you guys remember the older batteries that you actually had to open up the individual cells and add distilled water to them periodically. They've finally gotten to the point where most of the batteries on the road today and in boats today are considered maintenance-free, meaning you don't have to open up any of the cells and add distilled water. And so they brag and they say, hey, we've got these maintenance-free batteries. But the truth of the matter is, you really do need to maintain your batteries. Just like I mentioned earlier with your automotive batteries, plug them in once a month and keep them topped off with a battery charger, not your alternator. The same thing goes for the marine batteries. And one of the questions I always ask the anglers who come into my backyard is, when do you charge your batteries? And most of them say as soon as they come off the water. Some of them will say the night before they're going to go out again. And that's the worst time to charge your batteries, because anytime any lead-acid battery is discharged below 12.4 volts, which is not hard to do with trolling motors and all the other gadgets that people have on their boats these days, batteries start to sulfate. And the longer you let them sit in a sulfated discharged state, the more internal resistance is going to get built up, the more corrosion, and you're going to shorten the lifespan of your battery significantly. So when you come off the water, plug those batteries in with a battery charger, a good quality battery charger, charge them up all the way. And if you have a smart charger, one that's microprocessor controlled, you can leave them plugged in. And not everybody does that. Sometimes they'll just charge them overnight. Those Group 31 batteries are really big. And depending on how fast your charger charges a battery, it may take more than just overnight to charge them. And depending on how your boat is wired and set up, you may have something that stays on in your boat that you might not even realize that might discharge your batteries over time. So even if you charge them as soon as you get off the water and then you unplug them the next day, man, you could have something going on that's discharging your batteries. Next time you go out to run your boat, they're dead, and you're done. I had a ski boat that ran the hour meter, and when the ignition button was pushed in, even if there was no key in the ignition, and it killed my battery one time, and that was the only time I needed to learn that lesson, and I kept my batteries plugged in ever since then.
Yeah. Now, Stan, did you have a question for Jim?
No, well, just kind of what Jim and I were talking about before, you know, for your a lot of these new troll motors, they've got 36 volt options and 24 volt option. That 24 volt option comes into play if you got three batteries in there that you've got for your trolling motor, and your starter battery gives up the ghost, so to speak, and you need to pull one off of your 36 volt system. You can run these new trolling motors like the Ghost on 24 volts, and it has almost the same horsepower that you have with the 36, and it'll get you through the day, but you're still able to get home if your starter battery takes a dump on you, which happens a lot. There's a lot of guys out there, you don't know how, they don't talk about it, but they'll get out there, and without starting their motor a lot and not running a lot, with all the power that it's pulling, it'll kill that starter battery in a halfway through the day. And now, without a jump, you're on the trolling motor back to the dock or having to try to figure out how to get there. So having there's a good balance here of, you know, why you might just stick with what we've got here with the Optima system. I run three batteries for my trolling motor and a single for my starter. And I've gone to the bigger Group 31 for the starter because it just holds up with all the electrical pull that is being drained from your systems. I think that's what even, you know, Edwin Evers, Jim was saying he has, what, two batteries for starter batteries?
He runs two D27 batteries. So that's not our largest, but our second largest battery. And that doesn't just start his engine, but it runs all his screens and his live well and you know, power poles and whatnot.
You know, Jim, I used to have a Champion boat, and there was absolutely no room in there for the batteries. And I always liked the larger series of batteries. And then when it came time for me having to check the fluid in the batteries, I couldn't get to all the portals to see whether or not there was fluid in there. And it was always a pain in the butt. I finally went over to the Optimum battery, and I could take that battery and I could put it on its side and slip it on in there. I didn't have to worry about anything coming on out. And all of a sudden, I went from a nightmare to an ease of charging my battery. Was I correct in assuming that I could put that battery in almost in any position and still have it work without hurting it?
Yeah, and we don't recommend people put them in upside down. You could, in theory, but honestly, we think if you can put it in upside down, you can probably fit it in the same spot right side up. And if there's any danger of the battery falling out of whatever you've mounted it in, you just don't want those positive and negative terminals arcing on anything. So you can mount our batteries in a variety of positions. And the problem that you talked about with not being able to reach out all the cells with those maintenance-required batteries, that was common. And so it's kind of like the LT1 engines and the GM and the F-bodies, the Camaros and the Firebirds. Guys couldn't reach that one spark plug, so they never bothered to change that one spark plug. So in those batteries where you just couldn't get to that one cell and add add distilled water, you know, that one cell dried up. And guess what? When the one cell went bad, the whole battery goes bad. And when you're running batteries in series or parallel, they should all be the same age, the same size, and the same type. So if you have a battery go bad in a 36-volt system, you really should replace all three batteries, because as batteries age, they start to act like smaller batteries because the internal resistance builds up, and it's harder to get current delivered into them, and it's harder for current to come out of them. So It's an expensive and painful purchase to make when you have one go bad, and you really should buy all three, but that's the proper way to do it. And then Edwin Evers, Stan mentioned him. He did some videos on our YouTube channel, and it's pretty easy to find, just, you know, youtube.com/OptimaBatteries. One of the best ones I think he did talked about what he does when he fishes tournaments and he's not at home, because I know some of your listeners fish tournaments, and when you're fishing a tournament, you're staying at a hotel or a motel. There could be 10, 15, 20 other guys fishing the same tournament at that hotel, and they're all plugging their boats in at night. Right. So one of the things that Edwin brings with him on every road trip he makes is the thickest gauge extension cords that he can find, and then he brings them in different lengths because he wants the shortest run to that outlet, wherever that outlet might be, with the thickest gauge extension cord that he can find. And that's where a lot of guys miss out, because they just they throw a 200-foot cord in their truck, and they figure they've got themselves covered. Well, there's some resistance in that, and really for the best flow of that electricity into your batteries through the charger, you want to have the thickest gauge possible and the shortest run, so you have the least amount of resistance. And a lot of guys will get hurt when they're trying to charge on the same, power source as 10, 11, 12 other boats, because they just have too much resistance in how they're trying to charge their batteries.
Yeah, Jim, people used to think that you had to charge the batteries all the way down to almost when they were dead and then recharge them again, because they were thinking that if you kept on charging them at certain points of how much charge you have left in them, those batteries would start taking a set. But what I'm hearing from you is, especially with the Optima batteries, that's not the case.
No, and I've heard that a lot, where they think batteries have a memory, and if you don't exercise them enough, you're not going to get the full potential out of them. That's just not true. The reality, and it's not just for Optima batteries, but any lead-acid battery, the more deeply you discharge your battery, the fewer cycles you will get out of it. And it's not like a straight line. There's a curve to it. So if you're discharging your battery down to 10%, you might get 100 cycles out of it. If you discharge your battery down to 80%, you could get 500 cycles out of it. It's a significant difference. So if you're looking to save money by going with a smaller battery, and you're just going to cycle it more deeply and discharge it more deeply every time you use it, it's not going to work out for you in the long run, because that battery is just not going to last as long as a larger battery was that doesn't get discharged as much when you use it.
Jim, a lot of the pros have told us that no matter what, they religiously change their batteries at least every 2 years. They don't wait for any signs of their batteries going out. As a recreational user, where I only might be having my boat out once or twice a month, as opposed to a tournament angler, is there a time that I should really be looking at that I should change the batteries, or is it really dependent on how many times I charge it and discharge it?
It really does depend on usage, and not just how many times you cycle it, but how deeply you cycle it. Do you fish on a river with current all the time, or you with your conditions all the time, or do you use it very little? One of the great things about batteries is that they sell them at every automotive parts store you can think of, CarQuest, AutoZone Advance, O'Reilly Pep Boys. And I was just in one the other day. I was at an O'Reilly down here in Florida with a lawnmower battery. Optima doesn't make power sports or lawnmower batteries, but I went in, I said, can you load test this battery for me? And they do it for free. So if you're concerned about the lifespan of your battery and whether it needs to be replaced or not, you can take your battery or your batteries into any automotive parts retailer near you. Interstate Batteries is another place that can do it, 4-Wheel Parts. And they'll load test them, and most of them will load test them for free, especially if they think they're going to get a battery sale out of it. So that's a free and accurate way to find out the lifespan of your battery and whether it's getting close to needing to be replaced or not, is take it in and have it load tested. But in order to get the most accurate load test, they're going to want to have a fully charged battery. So make sure you fully charge them, or at least try to fully charge them before you bring them in. Sometimes you think the battery's on its way out, and you've had it on a charger for a couple days, and they say, it's not working. Then you know, because you've tried to fully charge it, and it's not there. It needs to be replaced.
Jim, what should they be looking for in a load test?
Well, carbon pile load testers are the best. Most auto parts stores will have handheld units, and they do a good job as well. And And depending on the load tester that the auto parts stores have, and I think a lot of marinas probably have these as well, some of them will just say okay or needs to be replaced. Some of them will measure cold cranking amps. If it's an 800 cold cranking amp battery, the load tester will come back and say, test at 910, it's still good. So sometimes batteries can be charged and will show that they're holding good voltage, 12.6 to 12.8 volts, but there's nothing left in the tank, really. When you put a load on them, they drop down right away. And I know a lot of people have experienced that with their batteries. They're like, I don't get it. The voltage is good, and I measured it with my voltmeter, and it's good. But when I put a load on it, it doesn't turn over the engine, or I get the click or whatever. That's where the load test can really cut through that uncertainty for you and put an actual load on the battery and say, no, there's nothing here. Or, yes, it's working great.
Jim, we've got to get going here. But if people are interested in contacting you about maybe where's the right battery for the application that I have, what to use it, and if there is a dealer near me where I can go to get the battery, how can they get this information from Optima?
OptimaBatteries.com is our website. We have a dealer locator on there. We have a vehicle locator, and I help oversee all their social media, the Facebook, Twitter, the Instagram. Twitter probably and Facebook are the easiest ways to track us down. But info@OptimaBatteries.com is our email address. And then 888-8-OPTIMA is our toll-free hotline. And during normal business hours, not, you know, Friday night when an angler is coming in at 10 o'clock at night. But during normal business hours, we got a great staff that's very knowledgeable and willing to help you.
Jim, have you been getting a lot of questions from some of these anglers that keep their boat outside and they are in these frigid, cold conditions about their battery and what they should be doing?
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, if your battery is on a maintainer and it's fully charged, it's probably going to be okay. Even people that, you know, in Nebraska are going to see minus 26 tonight, a fully charged battery should be okay for a couple hours at minus 26 because, you know, inside the boat, you know, in underneath the compartment, it's probably not going to get quite that cold. Wind chill has no impact on a battery at all. But the problem folks run into when the battery is not fully charged, that electrolyte moves closer to being water. And we all know water freezes right around 32 degrees. So the more discharged the battery is, the warmer the temperature it is that it'll freeze at. So fully charged that battery, our yellow tops and blue tops are protected from freezing down to minus 30 Fahrenheit. And our red tops, because of the makeup of the electrical, the paste and all that, the composition, they're protected from freezing down to minus 50. So we actually use those in some military and some airplane applications for starting carts because they can start planes at minus 50 degrees when a lot of other batteries are not even thinking about doing anything but cracking open.
Well, Jim, thank you for being with us. A lot of great information, not only if we have Optimum batteries, but just battery care in general. And we look forward to speaking to you again. And thank you for spending some time with us, sir.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right.
Hi. This is John, and I'd like to invite you to the new Anglers Arsenal location in Lakeside, California. We've put together a staff of experts that'll help you find the tackle and gear you need at a price you can afford. We carry all major brands, and if you need custom work done, we can do that for you with both rods and reels. How about servicing your old equipment? No problem. We can do it quickly, easily, at a price you can afford. We also do custom hand-poured plastics through Western Plastics. Design the lure of your dreams and catch the fish that have been getting away. So come and visit us in Lakeside. We're at 12255 Woodside Avenue. Or you can visit us at anglersarsenal.com. If you need to call us, we're at 619-466-8355. See you there.
Gamakatsu hooks are made from high-grade carbon steel specially heat-treated to make them light and extra strong but not brittle. The Gamakatsu sharpening process is the most modern in the world and results in a perfectly conical point that is unequaled in sharpness. Gamakatsu offers a huge variety of hooks for all types of fishing, drop shot, extra wide gap, worm hooks, finesse wide gap, and a lot more. Gamakatsu has a hook for whatever style of fishing you want to do. Don't waste your time on a cheap hook. Ask for Gamakatsu hooks at your favorite tackle store now.
There's nothing more peaceful than fishing. Just me, my pole, and some bait. Oh, and my life jacket, of course. I like fish, but I don't want to end up at the bottom of the water with them. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Are you looking for a quality fishing experience out of Cabo San Lucas for you, your family, and friends, but are a little set back with what charter company to choose? We urge you to use American and family-owned Lands End Charters. Lands End Charters offers their passengers affordable and all-inclusive services on a variety of vessels and trips. Fish with the latest of fishing gear while experiencing the hospitality of a long-time-owned family business. Go to LensandCharters.com to see all of their vessels and amenities available. Call Cobble, Greg, or Jenny at 800-281-5778 when you're ready for an action-packed Cabo fishing experience. Hey, everybody. This is a message for our listeners from a new Baja Magic Lodge at Cedros Island. Cedros Outdoor Adventures wants to make your dream of fishing Cedros Island a reality. Want to go after giant calicos or yellowtail with the best Cedros Island fishing organization, but you just don't know who to contact? Then give Cedros Outdoor Adventures a call at 619-793-5419, or even better yet, log on to their informative website at CedrosOutdoorAdventures.com. There you can visit their trip calendar and schedule a trip that's convenient for you. Once again, the phone number is 619-793-5419, or their website of CedrosOutdoorAdventures.com. Run Real Radio is brought to you by BajaBound.com Insurance Services. Are you driving to Mexico? You can buy and print out your Mexican auto insurance policy online in the convenience of your own home or office in minutes now with BajaBound.com's easy-to-use website. After printing your auto insurance, check out the BajaBound.com site. There, too, you will find great travel tips and information to help you get the most out of your next road trip south of the border. So this is an important fact to remember. Use BajaBound.com. It's the easiest way to find and get Mexican auto insurance.
Butch, for a lot of our listeners that don't know you as well as Stan Woody and myself, for just the longevity that we have in the business, a lot of people just know you from reading a label, let's say on a slide swimmer that says the Butch Brown this or the Butch Brown that. Tell us a little bit about Butch Brown and kind of like how you got to where you are today.
Well, you know, I just took up the passion for throwing swim baits there when the Worm King Dinosaur came out, and Marv had brought them into the shop at Bob Sands Tackle back in the day. And I was around when they had stocked the Floridas and Sherwood and Kachuma and Casitas, but they were just fingerlings then. But then, you know, my whole life, my passion has been to catch big fish, because the small fish, you know, you don't talk about those much, but you talk about the big ones and you remember those. And we had northern bass in the lake I grew up at Lake Sherwood. And then as it evolved at, you know, when we moved from Sherwood area and they were draining it, I went to Castaic, to the After Bay, and they were just getting ready to open it. And I knew that they had some larger fish in there because I know they came from the Van Norman Dam when we had the earthquake, and they were put in there. So we had a sort of a good head start on fish. I don't know if they were Floridas or not, but you know, I remember my first 10-pounder out of there was on a black Shannon spinner with bucktail and a Pettigo pork rind on the back. Stan knows what that is. And then just sort of never looked back, you know. I just started catching these big fish and got pretty good at it. And then as time went on, I got in on all the new baits that started coming, like the Optimum and the Osprey, and, you know, and then the Huddleston hit the market. And, you know, I never wanted to be anybody or do anything. I just wanted to go fish. It was not a big deal. And then Kenny Huddleston, I sent him my first round of pitchers for the first year, and I think I had 60-something over 10 that year. And then he told me that I need to put a video camera in the boat, and I did. And the first fish I caught within 20 minutes was 16.5 pounds, and I got to watch it on my Sony Handycam. And then from there, it just went on into thinking that, well, maybe someday I can have a video. And then as the time went on, one fish wasn't enough to make a video. Five fish wasn't enough. 10 fish wasn't enough. 100 fish wasn't enough. It just got to be sort of addicting just to go catch one on film and then put it in the locker and save it. And then Kenny Huddleston took a couple of them and put them on his website, which I didn't even know how to use a computer till 2006, I think. And then somebody told me it was on, I think, Swimbait Nation or something, and YouTube. And ever since then, I've been running the camera. And I had a couple of years where I had 107 over 10, and another year where I had 127 over 10. And that Bassmaster was coming out to do an article on the 127. And, you know, it just got to be a lot of big, big fish. And then I had this time in my life when I couldn't really get big fish. And that was in like July, August, and September, the hottest months. And I used to try to force feed them the Huddleston. And I was logging in like 180 hours between some bites. And that's a long time on the water. And I got a hold of that Depth 250 when they first came out. You know, they weren't on the market, but I had a friend that told me they were coming, and I ordered 12 of them from him as a member. And when I got them, the fish reacted on them really, really good, and I had to go through some different hooks and styles of hooks to figure out what was going to work for me. But then here I had the goose that laid the golden egg for June, July, August, September, the hot months. This bait took care of business, so therefore I had a bait for the whole year to catch double-digit fish. And, you know, I go through the seasons and what I use. And, you know, I amassed a lot of video with the 250, you know, and some big, big stringers. And I thought to myself, you know, I could have made something maybe to be in the industry with Huddleston. And at one point, he offered me like 5% of Huddleston and then all the baits I could possibly want. And I told him, nah, I don't need that. You know, I'll take some baits, though.
You know, the other part is, Butchie, the other part of that is you changed the way to hook, put the hook in the HUD and changed the way that the guys or you fished the HUD differently than anybody else by the way you were throwing it and the different, they had the 12, the 5, the 0, you know, you had different weights and you had a plethora of ways to fish the baits that you had figured out, including ways to hook, different ways to hook, put a hook in the bait.
Yes. Yes. A trial and error, you know, cause I lost a lot of fish and I didn't like the idea of the trap hook because the trap hook gets in their gill. And if it tears that gill, you killed that fish. You know what I mean? And they would swallow that bait, but it seemed like they always hit it head first. Any substantial fish hit it head first. And then what happened was, is I was on a spot where I have that big limit that you see in the depth picture. And I was throwing a tournament talon single hook and I lost 5 over 10 back to back on a single hook. And I even had the fish hooked in the upper part of the mouth and I watched him throw the hook. And I stopped right there. I cut that hook off and then I crimped on the one that I'm using now that I use on the Huddleston. And I very seldom ever lose a fish anymore because the hook flexes and it, you know, it's very stealthy. It's very clean. You know, it definitely was a game changer. And I just called it the Butch Brown rig and did a little video with it. And that was that. You know, I still use it to this day on just about every bait that I use that is rubber. You know, I cut that top hook right off. So it's definitely worked out for me.
There's a lot of folks listening out there that have thrown swim baits continuously, and maybe they don't know the right rod or the right reel. Could you give us just some pointers about the reel and the rod and the line that you use and associate with what bait that you're using to throw that gear with?
I use the same rod and reel to throw a HUD, a 250, and a thumper tail. And it started out with a Loomis 957 and a Shimano Calcutta 400 level wind. And to this day, I still use the Calcutta 400 with 20-pound Seaguar Abrasix, which is my line of choice now. I used to use P-Line CXX or Max, mm-hmm. but, you know, the fluorocarbon changed a lot. It lasts longer, and you don't go through as much line. You know, I can go, you know, quite a while throwing that stuff. It stays pretty limber. The mono I have to change every time. But the reason I use those wider reels is because I make long casts and my spool doesn't shrink down into a little pencil-sized tube, you know. Yeah, and I've been using the reel so long that I know the cadence that I, without even looking at it, when I need to speed up, slow down, and I know how to present my bait with that reel. And I'm not one of those guys that goes out for the latest and greatest. You know, if I find something that works, I stick with it. It's a high percentage tool, and I don't change anything unless I absolutely have to, because the results are in. You know, I have all those videos, and just to promo your show, you know, like this morning I went out fishing and got a 10 and a half to promo your rod and reel club on video with a swim bait. And then I think it was yesterday, I got one about 8.5 pounds. You know, and then I go home. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, I look at the moon phase, I look at everything and my timing. And the way I look at things is we only have so much time on this earth. We only have so much time to fish. So whatever we do, we need to figure it out and keep the high percentage in your bracket. So that way you're not out there searching and hunting and trying to figure these fish out. And, to me, I know where to be and when wind changes and all that stuff. And I do travel around. I do go up to Northern Cal and stuff, and I have to tell those guys up there, because I know them, that I won't be posting any of their fish, and don't worry about it if you see me on your water, and don't tell me your spots, because, you know, I don't want you telling me that I took your spot if I happen to find a nugget up there. You know, I'd rather just be on my own. And it's worked out really good. You know, I have a contract with Depths, and Huddleston has treated me well, and that's like something that's going to stick with me as far as, you know, when you hear the name Huddleston. So I get to create colors for Depths, which brown colors, and we have some other lures that are in the mix that we're going to be putting out. And so it's been a nice little journey for me. I've been a drywall contractor my whole life. I've worked really hard, and it took care of my family, and it helped me, it got me to go fishing a lot, because I'm a, you know, self-employed. But, you know, sometimes when you sit there and you go fishing and you look at some of these royalty checks that you get, you wonder, you know, did I really have to work that hard? You know what I mean?
You know, the cool thing about Butch Brown, and I've known Butchie forever, we've been friends for a long, long time, and watching him evolve has been really fun. You know, he quit tournament fishing a long, long time ago, and he became the guy that just, I've caught enough little ones, I want to catch big ones. And that was his attitude about everything, and learning how to catch the big ones, not only in freshwater, but in saltwater. So when he goes and he fishes on with the Lopresti on the Supreme, and he'll do his long range trips. He was the first guy in 2000, the year 2000, to step on land at
Clipperton. Clipperton.
At Clipperton. Yeah, the first man to step to Clipperton in 2000. So, I mean, he's got a long history behind him. I just smile every time I see something happening. When he goes long range fishing, like he was out there, and I saw he didn't catch a lot of fish, but he caught every one was a big fish. And I go, well, Butchie, all he's doing is pinning on a bonita or skippy and man baits and wait until he gets the one big bite, because that's how
man.
He fishes.
All three jackpots, bam, thank you. Yeah, Butch, I'll take it.
Butch, we could be talking swim baits for 2 hours here and not even scratch the surface on
techniques.
Yes,
you can.
Let's do a swim bait 101, and just in general, let's talk about surface swim baits, suspending swim baits, and deep swim baits. When do you throw what? Is there a time of the year, or do you try all different things until the fish tell you what they want?
Well, actually, right now in the colder months, most of the stuff is pretty near the bottom. And the bites that I'm getting right now are I don't fish real deep. I fish most of the time 10 to maybe 20 feet of water, you know, and the sweet spot seems to be around 15 to 18. But right now I'm getting these fish that move up in the shallow end in the afternoons when the weather is warmer, like today, and I'll be rolling that, you know, I like rubber baits. You know, I'll be rolling that bait along, and then I'll hit a little patch of milfoil. And when I hit that milfoil, I give it a big snap, like it's escaping. And when the bait starts to settle down to the bottom, the line will tick. And that's how I'm getting most of my bites right now. I'm not getting bit out deep. But then as this goes into, you know, end of February and into the beginning of summer, then I'm going to be doing the 250 and fishing some of the other columns of water. But I try a little bit of everything. But in the summertime, I got to admit, it's pretty much subsurface 250 kind of stuff. And I do slow roll a 250 on the bottom, too, in 30 feet of water, and that's very effective. But right now, it's just a bunch of moss on the line.
Butch, explain a 250. People don't know what that is.
The 250 is a glide bait. And it's got a rubber skin on it. It's about 10 inches long, weighs about, 6-7 ounces. And they're not really cheap, you know, but then again, what is cheap anymore in fishing? And it sinks fairly slow, and it's got a really natural swim to it. And it has what we call draw power. The fish get to where they look at this bait, and you can pull some of the biggest fish in your lake and see them. Just literally follow that lure to the boat. They might not hit it, but they'll show you their colors. And, you know, it sort of started the whole glide bait trend. You know, that was the thing that came in after the Huddleston. You know, because like back when, remember that float tube derby that we did, Stan, and I got that fish on the Optimum?
Yep.
That was about the beginning of the year for the Optimum. You know, and I was on that that spot out there and ran home and called that guy up to borrow a float tube. And lo and behold, I went home with two float tubes, you know, two new ones.
Well, yes,
first place and big fish. And
now,
when I walked down there to do that float tube tournament, I had a 10-inch Optimum tied on my line. And the guys looked at me like I was nuts. You know, they were laughing. Because I had one rod, one big rod, and I was in a float tube, and they all had little worms, and sort of showed them.
Yep.
You know, one bite's all it took. But you know, I think Huddleston and the Magnum trout have great paint jobs, but I think a lot of these companies run a little short on their paint job. You know, being as I study these fish a lot and I see what they react to and stuff. I see lures that are made that are anatomically correct, but they might not have the right paint job, or they might have this beautiful paint job, but they don't swim very good, you know? So you try to, you know, make that thing work to what you're looking for. And, you know, like when I found the Depths, they asked me about it and I told them that their color sucked. And they're like, well, what do you mean? I go, well, the carp's your best color. And I go, the Beulah's a nice color, but your trout is not a trout. And I had hand-painted my own. And that's where the flash trout came in. That bait was sent back to them to copy. And that's the number one seller as far as one of the trout colors. Every time we get them, they're just completely sold out. But, you know, you got to match the hatch. Our largemouth bass in Southern California, in L.A. and Ventura and San Diego County lakes, are heavily pressured. They got big, big eyes. They're very, very smart. They've seen everything that's hit the water. You need to have one up on them. So you need to put everything in order. You know, fluorocarbon line, no clips, no swivels. Be quiet. Maybe turn the sonar off like me. You know, don't touch the trolling motor when you're working your swim bait in. You know, because if you get a follower and you hit that thing to keep yourself out, you know, he could be gone. You know, all these little things, you know, your hook choice. See, I prefer a bronze hook on the bottom of all my swim baits. Like, remember the old Kestic Chubby Cheeks that Kenny made?
Sure.
They had a bronze hook on the bottom. And to me, a black hook contrasts with the bait, and a silver hook is a shiny hook on the bait. But I think a bronze hook, thin wire, blends in a Gamagatsu round bend hook, bronze 2-aught. I use that on all my 250s, you know, and it pays off. And very seldom do they ever bend it. You know, the only time they bend that hook is either when the fish is in the net and he's flopping around, or if I get bit and there's like 2 or 3 feet of line out and he goes ballistic next to the boat and there's just no stretch or anything and stuff happens. But
yeah, but that light wire hook doesn't bend very easily either, so it takes some real pressure at that point.
It does. And as far as the rubber baits like the Huddleston, I prefer a VMC hook. And the reason for that is because the barb on a VMC is bigger than on a Gamagatsu when you get down into a 1 and a 1-aught size. So when you hook a fish on the VMC, it's a thin wire bronze hook also, but the barb is bigger. So when the barb goes inside the skin, when they can shake all they want, it's not coming out. But on the Gami, the barb gets very small. And when you got a 6, 7, 8 ounces flopping around out there, they tend to throw the bait pretty easy. And, you know, you're a zero if you don't have a picture of that fish and the fish is in you. All you got is a story. You know, should have seen the one that got away. And I like to take pictures of my fish. So, you know, and I paint the back of my hooks like on the HUD. You know, I'll paint it the color of the HUD and put speckles on it and camo it out pretty good. You know, I try to keep everything as almost like a worm fisherman, as meticulous as they are at their drop shot rigging and all their stuff. I'm meticulous in my swim bait world.
Butch, tell us just a little bit about when you cast and that bait hits the water, what do you do? Do you let it sink? Do you slowly start retrieving it to get down to the water column that you're looking for or what? What and how often do you get hit on the drop?
Well, last Thursday, just this Thursday, I got a call from a guy wanting to do a podcast from Bass Tour Anglers. And he called me and left a message at 7 at night. And at 8 o'clock the next morning, I sent him a message just like I sent you on your promo stuff, because I had already caught one, and I told him, I said, hey, thanks, man, but I can't be on your podcast, you know, because I'm too busy out catching big fish in your local lakes. And he saw the fish I was holding up, so he knew that I had to have caught it that morning. But that day I got bit 15 times, and 5 of the hits were on the sink right about when it hit the bottom. And why that is, I don't know, but I pay attention to that all the time. You know, I don't fish and let it sink with a tight line. You know, I leave a little loop in my line, and I watch. I'm a line watcher, you know, but I can also feel it, you know, if I do get that tick, and I'm pretty fast on the draw when they do it. But, you know, when you talk about letting it sink out, you know, the rubber baits, they sink fairly quickly, so you can let those sink to the bottom. But, like, right now, the way my 250s are rigged, they're heavier, so I don't really have to wait that long for them to get down in 20 feet of water. But yeah, I'll let them sink all the way to the bottom. And then I just turn the handle about 3 or 4 times real quick. And I know that thing's gliding about 4 or 5 feet to one side. And then about 2 seconds later, I go the other direction, and they usually hit it when it's gliding. And it's just, the big fish are just a little tick. They don't yank the rod out of your hand or anything like that. Sometimes it's the smallest bite you could even imagine is the biggest fish. It's amazing. But
Butch, we only have a couple more minutes with you before you have to take off. If you could leave our listeners with just maybe one tip that you think that the beginning swim bait fishermen or intermittent swim bait fishermen don't necessarily pay attention to, that might help them catch more fish. Can you leave us with one tip before you leave?
The best tip I can leave you is a tip that my dad gave me when I was a kid. He said, if you want to go bass fishing with me, you need to leave all your bluegill stuff at home. because I'll just end up picking up a, you know, if we're not catching bass, I'm going to go catch bluegill right behind the boat. Well, it's the same thing in swim baiting. If you want to be good at swim baiting and you want to be, you got to be diligent about it. You need to, you know, leave this, your go-to stuff at home, your drop shot rig, your worms, your crankbaits, things like that. That way, when you're out there, all you have is, you know, that swim bait, the fish. So it's do or die. And eventually, just have faith and keep going, because you're going to get the bite probably when you least expect it, you know. And that's about the best advice I can give you. And those days when you're not supposed to go fishing, but for some reason it works out that you can go, those are usually the days that you catch your big one.
So you were just spending the time, like you said, spend the time. There's a lot of different baits out there, and each one has its moment. You kind of have to learn, and the fish will tell you what they want. Mm-hmm. So learn, you know, you need to learn how to throw kind of each of the baits, that the glide baits, where they travel the best, the plastic baits, where they work the best, and how to best present that bait. You know, the one that falls faster, the one that falls slow but is very effective, or the one that even makes a wake, because each one has its own personality and each one has its own special time when you throw that one bait.
Exactly. Even the Lunker Punker, you know, that's like a surface wake bait kind of traveler, got a unique action, and it's very effective. The Pupfish, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the best thing to do is, if you want to get serious about it, is leave all the other stuff at home, bring your swim bait stuff, and then stick it out. And, you know, and talk to some people. The internet's, you know, I don't really look at the internet for information, but, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on there that people can, you know, learn from, well, and if you see me on the water,
we can see a lot of good stuff from Butch Brown on there, that's for sure. And Butch, we were talking during the middle of the week, you said, well, you know, we got some storms coming in. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go out and catch any fish between now and the time I'm on the show.
Yep.
Sure enough, you found a window of opportunity. You went out there and you had great results. Just tell us real quickly about that trip.
Well, okay, so Thursday was a great day. I had fish up to 9 pounds, and I had at least 15 hits, and I had a school. Actually, I hit a school where I took 4 or 5 fish. I probably got hit 8 of the 15 times just in that back-to-back cast. I even got it on film where I looked at the camera, and I go, this is how you catch a fish on a swim bait, and I throw it out there, and I look at the camera, and I go, you got to let it sink, and then I took 2 wines, and bingo, there it is, a 5-pounder right in the boat. But that was the beginning of probably the barometer dropping in for the week, you know. And then when Friday rolled around, it was colder and a little bit more windier, and I didn't even get a bite, not a bite all day. And I stayed till 2:30. Then I said, you know what? I need a vacation. I'm going to go to work. So I'm going to go to work on Saturday. And I went to work on Saturday, and my guys were doing so good. And I said, you know what? I said, let me give you guys your checks. And I said, if I stay here, we're going to be done by noon. But why don't you guys just stay till 1 and call it a day, full pay, whatever, and I'll run to the lake. And sure enough, I ran to the lake. And the bite on Thursday was between 12 and 2, right before the moon crested. And so I got there at noon. And there was some people down in my area, and I stayed clear so they wouldn't hone in on any of my little rocks and things that I fished down there. And they left, and I rolled right in there at about 3 o'clock, which would make the moon phase about right, and got bit 4 times. And one of them was a 9-pounder. And that was the one that I did for you the other night. And then I knew this morning was going to be sunny. And back where I think there's 3 fish in the lake. I think there's fish that move out into the deep water, 50, 60, 70 feet, and they winter out there and they eat the shad and they follow the schools. I think there's fish that home guard back in the shallows and they hang out in the weeds and they follow the coot around, because I fish the coot, you know, the mud hen, because when the mud hen are diving in those weeds, they're spooking out a lot of bait and a lot of bait fish, you know, baby bass, baby bluegill, baby carp, whatever it might be. So I fish the edge. They tell me where the weeds are. So I fish the edges of those guys, and that's where I'm getting the fish now. Well, when the sun comes out, I think some of the fish in the back of, or the front of the lake that might be a little deeper water, well, some of that bait branches off and comes down into the warmer section into the back, and they follow it just for a short time. It might only be an hour or two. You know, the window is very small, but they move down there, and, you know, if I get the timing down right, I know exactly where they're going to be, and then boom, 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 I'll get, you know, five or six hits in an area in less than a half an hour, and then they're gone. And, well, that's what I was banking on today, except today was the exception to the rule because I caught that fish at about 7:30, 8 o'clock this morning, and it was really cold. And there's a guy that fished 2 days and he got skunked, and I called him when I left and I said, hey, it's very sunny out, it's calm, and everybody's gone from the back of the lake. You should come on up. He's from Santa Monica. He sent me a picture and he thanked me for he was going to take a nap today, and he thanked me because he got a 10-7.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Yeah, right back in that, I told him right where the area needs to be. And the warm water, you know, it's warming up. It's a couple degrees, and it gets them going. So, I'm a strong believer in a lot of our bait fish stay in the milfoil and the hydrilla-type pond weed and all that kind of stuff. And then we get tens of thousands of coot that come in, and they start chewing that stuff up through the winter. And now it's into small little sections. And if you know where those little sections are, then that's where the fish are.
Butch, I know you have to leave. We've kept you over a lot longer that we're probably going to make you late for your next appointment. But if people want to keep up with you and see your videos, keep track of what you're doing, and maybe get a pointer or two, how's the best way to go about doing it?
Usually a message through Facebook, you know, or if I post something on Instagram, you know, you can respond. But right now I'm in that fishing mode. You know what I mean? So I try not to look at the messages on Facebook because it just goes off the hook. You know, I mean, it just goes right down the page, and to answer all of that stuff, you know, takes me half a night, and it makes it sort of hard, but that's usually the best way. Or come up to the lake and just ask me point blank. You know, I'm up there 3-4 days a week. I got the black boat. You can't miss me. You know, and meet me at the dock. What the heck? You know, I have a lot of people come up and meet me.
And for our listeners, which lake are we talking about now, Butch?
Well, it's one of the Castaic lakes.
Okay.
There you go.
Great.
There you go.
They can figure that out. If they can't figure that out when they watch a video, then they don't need to know.
Butch, normally we look forward to seeing you at the trade shows, and that doesn't seem like it's going to be happening this year. So
I know.
The next That's opportunity horrible. We have to see is going to be on the water.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. Well, let's hope with, like Stan said, with all this stuff going on and the vaccines, we get this over with. Because in our lifetime, we've never seen this before.
Nope.
You know,
nope.
Who would have thought?
Okay. Butch Brown, thank you. Butch, thank you so much for being with us and taking time and sharing some of your experience and your expertise. I know a lot of the little things that you give us has taken years for you to actually learn. So I can't tell you how much we appreciate the hints that you give us. It's really good of you.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one fishing, hunting, and shooting sports retailer, now has 28 locations. Turner's is your one-stop shop for fishing tackle, hunting gear, and everything for shooting sports. Turner's offers a full selection and unmatched prices on the gear you need. Whether you're planning a fishing trip with the family or chasing giant tuna, Turner's highly skilled staff will make sure you have the gear for your next adventure. Visit turners.com to find a Turner store near you, and be sure to join the Turner's Discount Club to get weekly ads and specials right to your inbox. Turner's Outdoorsman, your one-stop shop for all your fishing needs.
Hi, Roland Martin here. I'd like to tell you a little about Gary Yamamoto and the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company. It all started with an idea, then a dream, and in 1983, the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company was formed. If you know Gary Yamamoto like I do, and I've known him since 1983, you know he has a passionate love for the sport of fishing. That love is only matched by his obsession to design and produce the highest quality soft plastic fishing lures on the market today. Every bait Gary makes is inspected by hand. Today, more than 2.5 million packages of bait are shipped worldwide. On behalf of Gary and his staff, he wants to thank his customers for thinking so highly of his products and wishing you the great success of the sport of fishing. Whether you fish for fun or fish the tournament circuits like I do, you'll honor Gary for making Gary Yamamoto custom baits a key part of your fishing experience. Take it from me, Roland Martin. When I'm in need of a go-to bait, my first choice is a Gary Yamamoto custom bait.
Are you looking for a quality fishing experience out of Cabo San Lucas for you, your family, and friends, but are a little set back with what charter company to choose? We urge you to use American and family-owned Lands End Charters. Lands End Charters offers their passengers affordable and all-inclusive services on a variety of vessels and trips. Fish with the latest of fishing gear while experiencing the hospitality of a long-time-owned family business. Go to LensEndCharters.com to see all of their vessels and amenities available. Call Cobble, Greg, or Jenny at 800-281-5778 when you're ready for an action-packed Cabo fishing experience.
Hi, this is Lori Heath. You may know me from some of the sports boats out of San Diego. I want to talk to you about something that's really close to my heart, the San Diego Blood Bank. Fishing for a way to make a difference in your community? Consider donating blood or making a financial donation to the San Diego Blood Bank. Your gift will impact medical research, revolutionize how we improve health and treat disease, and most importantly, give the gift of life. But we can't do it without you or without your help. Visit sandiegobloodbank.org to make an appointment or to give a financial donation today. It's the best way to give back. And just to let you know, I'm also a blood donor.
But, you know, it's been a tough year for the commercial fishermen. So I thought what I'd do is I'd invite one of the largest commercial fishermen that owns a fleet out here that's out of San Diego and talk a little bit about what's happening with the commercial fleet and how they're adjusting and, you know, what kind of like is in the future for them. So let's introduce our listening audience to Captain Dave Hayward from Hayward Fishing. Captain Dave, how you doing tonight, sir?
Good. Good evening.
Hey, it is good having you. Welcome to Rod and Reel Radio. Dave, can you kind of lead us just down the road real quickly, like what you were doing 2 years ago in comparison to how you had to adapt to what you're doing in the past 12 months?
Well, in the past 12 months, we've had to adjust from just catching fish to marketing. I always marketed my fish, and I'd sell to a few different markets when I came in just to try to get, you know, the best prices I could. But when this pandemic hit, all of our markets pretty much shut down. And so, like, when it first hit, we had one boat that had, like, 40,000 pounds of fish on it. My son was running it, and we got in. We unloaded part of the fish. We got up to L.A. Pandemic hit, shut everything down. They called us up, hey, we can't do anything with your fish. We're just going to freeze them or, you know, we don't know what to do. And I just told them, bring them back, you know, bring them back to San Diego and we'll sell them. And luckily we've been selling, at Tuna Harbor Dockside Market, you know, for whatever, 5 or 6 years since it started. So we had a nice Saturday thing going. And so, we had a, you know, customer base and then, we got a hold of Tommy Gomes to help us with some marketing. And so we ended up putting it out on, you know, Facebook and just word of mouth. And the first day we got the fish back on a Friday and we had a line going down the street on Friday. And so we started selling and we sold, you know, a lot of on Friday and then we sold on Saturday and, you know, it worked out really good. And then Tom Driscoll, I contacted him and he said, hey, you can come sell over at our dock because we're only allowed to sell and over at Tuna Harbor Dockside Market on Saturdays, and it's not going to work. You can't move 40,000 pounds of fish in one day. So then we started selling over at Driscoll's, and we were able to move our fish. So it worked out good. We did lower the price to $10 a pound for ahi tuna, and that really, you know, attracted people. So they came, and when it first started, I said, we're going to keep the $10 for the whole pandemic, you know, just figuring it's going to last for a few months, and now it's been, you know, it looks like it's going to go on for a while. So we still have the $10 price.
You know, Captain David, tell us how many boats you have in your fleet and how far reaching is your fleet? How far do they go, and are they all going for the same thing, or are they going for different species? Do they all fish the same area? Tell us just a little bit about your fleet of vessels.
Okay, well, I have a couple boats that are longline boats, and they fish between here and Hawaii. We're not allowed to fish within 200 miles of the California coast or any piece of land in California, so we fish out further than that, and we run, you know, like halfway to Hawaii, or right now they're about 600 miles out, 500 miles out. And then I have a couple boats that fish albacore. So one of them's a bait boat, jig boat, so they go up and fish off Oregon, Washington, or California, or San Diego, if the albacore are here. But they haven't been here in, you know, years now, so we've been catching most of our fish off Oregon and Washington, and we freeze it, and we bring some back and sell it here, but we sell most of our fish up in Washington. Then I have another boat that does combination albacore, and it does swordfish, gill netting swordfish, so it nets swordfish. And then I have another boat that does deep set blue gear for swordfish and lobster and live fish. So that's, I think that's about it.
Wow. So when you come to Tuna Dockside Market or you go to Driscoll's, is it like you may not always expect to find the same species of fish there? Am I correct?
Yeah, it's like right now there's very little bit of albacore. This week I didn't have fresh big eye tuna. You know, I didn't have, I didn't have a boat in this week. So our boat's coming in this coming week. This week it's coming in. So, but like on Saturday, we didn't have a boat there. So you really never know. You kind of, you know, check our websites and stuff to see what we have. You know, we had some tuna, but just not the normal amount. And we just never know, you know, with the season and with fishing. Fishing, we never know. When you leave the dock, you're scared, you know, at least when I was running the boat, every time I left the dock, I was scared if I was even going to catch a fish. You just never know with fishing. So, you know, you just, you really, you know, never know what's going to happen. And sometimes you leave and it's horrible and you do really good. Sometimes it's really good and you don't catch anything. So you just, you know, it's one of those things. But we try to every Saturday have a market there. And there's a variety from rock crab to lobster to tuna to swordfish. The sheep's head, different kinds of rockfish. You know, we just have a, you know, we have different kinds of crab. We have prawns, you know, spot prawns. So just, you know, a whole variety, just depending on what the fishermen catch.
Tell us, you know, when going to Driscoll's, a lot of people may not know where Driscoll's is. And then tell us what the procedure is once someone gets there and gets into the parking lot, what they can expect to find and how you can help them out.
Well, Driscoll's, we do when a boat comes in and it's not, we were trying to have a boat there every week, but this last week we did not have a boat at Driscoll's. So Driscoll's is a little bit, you know, it's kind of easy to find, but it's a little hard to find. So it's just past the sport landing right next to the submarine base. And we usually put signs out that will say like Hayworth fish, it'll say ahi tuna, $10. And we put arrows, and then sometimes there's other boats selling there. They have signs up that say Atlantic Pacific tuna. And so there's a couple different fishermen that sell there. So we try to have signs up, and people just can follow the signs and, you know, go on Facebook, Hayworth Fishing on Facebook, or Tommy Gomes, you know, on his Facebook. He, you know, posts for us and, you know, just follow the directions there. And it's pretty simple. Just come down and you know, pick up your fish and ask questions. And when you are looking at fish, if you see a piece of fish that doesn't look right, don't buy it. And I'm talking about anywhere. I'm not just talking about with us, but just, you know, you always want to look at what you're getting. So, you know, look at it. If it doesn't look right, then, you know, get another piece that goes for at grocery stores or, you know, wherever.
You know, Captain David, a lot of people, when they go to their local grocery store, you see the product there in really nice wrap packages, but when they get down to the wharf there, it's just a little bit different. And sometimes people can be put off maybe with seeing the whole fish there. How can you help them up there? I mean, are you loining it out? Are you staking it out? Or do you just throw a whole fish in a bag in here? This is yours. Deal with it.
Well, we do both. At Tuna Harbor Dockside Market, we have a cleaning station. So people buy the fish, they take it over, and it's clean for them. They say how they want it cleaned. At Driscoll's, people sometimes buy whole fish. Mainly there, they're just buying the loins for the steaks. And, you know, we have people that buy fish and we'll have the crew clean it for them. I even have people that buy fish and take it to the processing, you know, for the sport fishing processing plants and have it processed. So, you know, you have a lot of options on what you want to do with it.
Well, you were also selling fish commercially. Do you find that there are other parts of the country right now that, let's say, are recovering, are coming back closer to normal than we're finding here in Southern California, or just does everything just seem to be just kind of shut down right now?
No, we're selling with the holidays. A lot of the foreign countries, you know, our business really fluctuates with import, our pricing, because, you know, the imports kill us. And so around Christmas, a lot of the other countries slow down. So right now, everybody wants tuna. So I'm getting calls. We could sell our load of tuna right now just to wholesalers. So they are, you know, they are buying. But when it comes to other stuff, like with OPA, like last month, we had a lot of OPA. So we lowered the price and had to move them. But that was a slow market for us. But tuna is moving good. Swordfish is moving good. Around the holidays, you know, we were selling a lot of swordfish. So, it was working out good. But I would say that marketing's getting better than what it was, you know, 6 months ago or whatever. People are adjusting. And my saying through this whole pandemic was people have to eat, because I always have people say, oh, you should stop fishing. And I said, well, if we stop fishing, people aren't going to eat. So, you know, we have to keep bringing in product so people can eat. So we found ways to get it through wholesalers to people.
All right. Hey, you Captain know, like, Dave, can like I ask you to market. Stay with us just a little bit longer? Because I know Stan and Wendy, they also have questions. And I want to talk a little bit also about you being a commercial fisherman under the U.S. flag and maybe some of the things you have to compete against when it comes to other vessels that are flying different flags. Can you stay with us for a little bit longer?
Sure.
All right. Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we're talking with Captain Dave Hayworth from Hayworth Fishing. We're talking about the commercial fish that are coming into our port here that you can buy, but we're going to also talk about what Captain David has to do sometimes to bring these fish to market. So stay tuned. Stan, Wendy, and I will be back after these messages.
John, and I'd like to invite you to the new Angler's Arsenal location in Lakeside, California. We've put together a staff of experts that'll help you find the tackle and gear you need at a price you can afford. We carry all major brands, and if you need custom work done, we can do that for you with both rods and reels. How about servicing your old equipment? No problem. We can do it quickly, easily, at a price you can afford. We also do custom hand-poured plastics through Western Plastics. Design the lure of your dreams and catch the fish that have been getting away. So come and visit us in Lakeside. We're at 12255 Woodside Avenue. Or you can visit us at anglersarsenal.com. If you need to call us, we're at 619-466-8355. See you there.
Every serious angler knows that a quality hook is an important part of their arsenal. Gamakatsu hooks are made from high-grade carbon steel specially heat-treated to make them light and extra strong but not brittle. Gamakatsu ring hooks are made with a one-piece ring, no welds, no weak spots, a very smooth-moving ring. Gamakatsu offers a huge variety of hooks for all types of fishing. Live bait hooks, both light and heavy-duty to four extra strong. Circle hooks, tuna hooks, ringed hooks, tuna doubles, and many more. Don't waste your next fishing trip on a cheap hook. Get Gamakatsu hooks at your favorite tackle store now.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Have you dreamed of experiencing the world-class in and offshore fishing off the exotic tropical Pacific coast of mainland Mexico? Why not fish the sailfish capital of the world, Manzanillo, Mexico, with the folks you know and trust, Cedros Outdoor Adventures. In Manzanillo, you can find roosterfish, sailfish, marlin, tuna, dorado, and more, all within 20 miles of the shore. Our friends at Cedros Outdoor Adventures are offering an all-inclusive travel package
to Manzanillo that makes your winter fishing dreams a reality for a special price of $21.95. Cedros Outdoor Adventures is a name you learn to trust for safety and value, but these trips are available for a limited time only, starting this fall through March 2021.
Learn further trip details and make your reservation at CedrosOutdoorAdventures.com or call at 619-793-5419.
Rod & Reel Radio is brought to you by BajaBound.com Insurance Services. Are you driving to Mexico? You can buy and print out your Mexican auto insurance policy online in the convenience of your own home or office in minutes now with BajaBound.com's easy-to-use website. After printing your auto insurance, check out the BajaBound.com site. There, too, you will find great travel tips and information to help you get the most out of your next road trip south of the border. So this is an important fact to remember. Use BajaBound.com. It's the easiest way to find and get Mexican auto insurance.
Stan, Wendy, and I, we'd like to welcome you back to Rod & Reel Radio. We're speaking with Captain Dave Hayworth from Hayworth Fishing. Captain Dave is the owner of a commercial fleet that is headquartered out of San Diego here. You know, Captain David, thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. I always to answer questions so people know what's happening.
Well, I got a question.
Go ahead, Stan.
Because the elusive word you brought up here, the albacore, because it has missed Southern California. It comes in up Morro Bay area and then slides up to Bragg and goes into Oregon there. How close do you get it, you know, outside of our arena here? Do you have to go west to find it before it curves to go back in toward Morro Bay on that current breaks out there? Or where do you find it close enough to here? Because we never see it. You know, very rarely is it on the market here. I can only imagine if you brought some back here, it would go in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we do. We bring back some frozen albacore, and we're selling. You know, we sell it down at Tuna Harbor Dockside Market for like $2.50 a pound for the whole fish. But we ran into it the last couple years. We really haven't seen much offshore. But last year, I would say in April, May, we ran into some albacore about 600 miles out. You know, we were catching, a fair amount of them, you know, like 100 a day or something, you know, 50 a day, 75. But we weren't seeing any before that. And it's kind of weird because when we first hit them, the first boats that hit them had like 6-pounders to 8-pounders. And we're like, oh, you know, interesting. And then a month later, a different wave came in and we were catching some that were 15 to 20 pounds. And then they showed up more off of Oregon and Washington than Morro Bay. I mean, they do, but recently they've been kind of just staying up high. And so they were coming across, let's say, the closest that we had. And there was a lot of rumors last year about fish at right here at San Clemente Island and stuff, but there wasn't really. That fish was about 500 to 600 miles, you know, basically straight west of San Diego, like 32 to 34. So, you know, that wouldn't be that far below Morro Bay. But by the time it came in where the jig boats and bait boats were getting it, you know, it was up, you know, in the 40, you know, around the 40 line, 42. So, and we can't figure it out. I mean, I grew up, I made my first commercial trip when I was 9 fishing albacore. We had a bait boat, a Barbara H out of San Diego. And I had left from San Diego and went all the way up to Oregon fishing. I remember we were fishing up there. And then the boats down here started catching them. So I remember running all the way up there and then turning around and running all the way back down here. You know, the sport fleet was getting a bunch of them. So a lot of the commercial boats ran back down here. And I've caught plenty of albacore off Point Conception, Morro Bay, like you're saying, San Francisco. So it's been baffling with the water, with the bluefin, not having the albacore down here. You know, I always expected to see them again, you know, to see, you know, some come here. So I can't, you know, figure it out. That's why they're called highly migratory species, you know, because who would know that there'd be thousands and thousands of tons of bluefin off San Diego, you know, the last couple of years that are, you know, 200-300 pounders. So, you know, just really hard to figure.
Well, in the years that gone by, I mean, we used to get, when the albacore were on the boat, you know, they'd get blown off by the bluefin had come in, and they'd chew for a while, and then the bluefin would sink out, and the albacore would come back. There was always albacore and bluefin mixed in. Now, we don't see that anymore. The boats that you were getting, you had said you had that 6-pound fish, 6-8-pound fish, that's not abnormal for the albacore back when. You know, you get that smaller fish first part of the season, and then that second wave kind of comes in, it's that more adult fish or a little bit bigger, and then every once in a while you get those huge fish that come up at Morro Bay, that 40 to 90-pound fish, which was pretty rare, but I never got one of those giants. But it was a fun fishery. Was it your jig boats that were getting those fish out there 600 miles west?
They were longline boats, but we do troll some jigs. And then there was a few boats that were coming up from the South Pacific that were jig boats that went through the area looking. And then there was a couple boats that left from Hawaii heading towards Oregon and Washington that went through. But they never caught very many of them out there. You know, they had, you know, 30, 40, like I said, I think up to 100. But it was a good sign because we hadn't seen any in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever out there. So I thought it was a really good sign, and I was kind of encouraged, but they never showed up here, you know. So it was, and the albacore season off Oregon, Washington wasn't, you know, a stellar season. It was, you know, average or below average season. So, you know, it was a little weird. So, you know, I can't figure it out. I keep predicting albacore going to show up off San Diego again. They will, but I don't know why they're not.
Well, you know, at least a generation of fishermen that don't know anything about what an albacore looks like or how to catch one on an anchovy, because that's just not been around for a while. It'll be an interesting year when that happens, I think. And all of us hope that happens soon. Actually, that would be fun. That used to be what drove the fishery down in San Diego, was waiting until the albacore get here. The yellowtail and albacore were the drive.
You know, Stan, I think what I miss most is the distinctive aroma that you get when you're in albacore and they're hitting the deck, and it is like something you've never experienced before.
I'll go for that.
Yeah.
When you're able to catch them when they were feeding, when they were chewing, and they're, you know, you make a cast and they're just all over right on the corner of the boat, put a bait in the water, you're on. And then the guys, even my little brother, the first one he was fishing with a spinning rod. I told him that might not be your best bet. And we were actually up out of Morro Bay. And in that 30 to 40 pound fish, when you get that albacore down there and you're fishing with lighter line, you know, these pulling on them and pulling them on them. And as you lift up, they just point those wings sideways and you just kind of drift them across the water column. And he goes, how do you get them up? You know, so there's so many fishermen out there that have never experienced that. It'll be fun when it finally happens again.
Dave, you know, as a commercial fisherman, I think it was in the early 1980s, I did an article for San Diego Fishermen, and we were talking about the commercial fleet here in San Diego. And when it came to the industries that were here in San Diego, military was first, vacationers and visitors were second, and commercial fishing was third. That's all gone away. Is it a matter of economics? Has commercial fishing been legislated out of here? Is it the cost of working in Southern California as opposed to anything? Why are you here and, Starkist is gone?
Well, when Starkist and those left, I left too. I was fishing in the South Pacific. I was fishing out of Hawaii, fishing other places because of it. And then finally, I just said, you know what? I want to fish out of my hometown, because I was kind of almost going to just retire and stuff. And, you know, I started fishing just back here and, you know, really enjoyed it again, trying to fish out of San Diego. The problem we have in San Diego or in California is the environmentalists are just out to shut down fishing. And one thing is that we're getting a lot better where the recreational fishermen and the commercial fishermen are working together to try to keep fishing. And one thing that recreational fishermen have to realize is we're heavily regulated. I mean, they tell us when we can go. We have GPSs or VMSs on the boat. They track us from the time we leave the harbor till the time we get back. They're tracking us at all times. They tell us what size hook we can use. They tell us what bait we can use, what size monofilament we're allowed to use, what size leads we're allowed to put on our lines. I mean, we have so many restrictions, and it's super discouraging. We have environmentalists trying to put us out of business. We even have recreational organizations trying to put commercial fishermen out of business who are trying to feed America. And there's all these other boats outside our 200-mile limit fishing with, you know, I say with filet mignon, they can use bait that we can't use. We're not allowed to use squid. They're allowed to use squid. They're allowed to use any size hook they want, any size mono they want, wire. And so it's really discouraging for me to try to stay in business with this happening. But we have, I'd say in the last 8 years or so, been working a lot closer with the sport industry, recreational anglers together on stuff, because now they're starting to realize, hey, when these commercial fishermen are gone, those nut jobs are going to come after us. So, you know, it's, you know, we have to share our resource, you know, especially off, you know, California. And I call California Club Med for the tuna, the swordfish, and everything else, because we have so many restrictions. The highly migratory species can come here, and there's so many limits that they don't get caught compared to Mexico or once they're outside of our 200-mile limit.
Well, that's the deal. For California, are you dealing with a 200-mile limit? Is it a Fed, the feds that you're dealing with at 200 miles? And what happens after that? You can go out 600 miles and you still have to adhere to the regulations that you're adhering to within the 200-mile limit?
Yeah, well, we're not allowed to fish with long line within 200 miles, and then they're trying to restrict all, you know, the use of nets. Also, like ban nets and stuff. And so, you know, you can't go out with, you know, this is a rod and reel show, but you can't go out with a rod and reel and catch enough fish to make a living and live in San Diego by ever buy a house or put a kid through college or whatever. You know, there's a couple fishermen that might be able to, but, you know, most of us, like me, I couldn't go out with a rod and reel and survive for the year. I could have a good month. I could have a good week fishing, but, you know, you have to have fish year round to survive. So, you know, it's super discouraging when we are, like, I was watching, you can look on the marine traffic and see the foreign boats and the U.S. boats fishing. And, like, there's a Taiwanese boat that just came in within 30 miles of one of my boats yesterday, 600 miles out. And there's two more Taiwanese boats about 100 miles past him. So we'll see if he stays or if he makes a couple sets and leaves. But, no, we can't. You know, those guys are setting, you know, just way different than we are. And we have to have observers basically 20 to 25% of the time on our boats. And we do have, like I said, I call it an ankle bracelet, where they're watching us wherever we go, whatever we do. And there's certain times we can fish. There's, you know, there's restrictions. And once you're a U.S. registered boat, you go by U.S. law. So it's not you go out in international waters and you become international. It doesn't work like that. So we have to abide by all U.S. regulations, being registered, you know, being a U.S. boat.
You know, David, as I understand it, when you have observers on the boats with you, or you are being monitored like that, this isn't the cost of this isn't picked up by some nebulous organization that's working out of Washington. You're the guy that actually has to pay to regulate yourself. Is that not true?
Well, it is true in some cases, and it's not true in other cases. So right now, we scream bloody murder when we had to pay for having an observer, because remember, you have to get an observer, then it has to be certified, then he has to have insurance. So, you know, it's costing like $600 or $700 a day. So right now, the government is paying for the observers that are on our boat. So they are paying. We do pay for the food, so we do feed them, and, you know, we do have to pay for their food and, you know, provide them a clean bunk area and take care of them when they're on the boat. So it's not a big problem because we don't have really anything to hide, but it is an inconvenience. And then especially with COVID now, trying to get an observer, and do you want someone on the boat that you don't know? And so, you know, it's a mess. And they want to put cameras on our boats now so that they monitor everything we do. And I have a problem with that. I mean, if we're running a legal business, if we have violations or something, they want to put a camera on my boat, I understand. If I have violations, they want to put an ankle bracelet on me, I understand. But if we don't, why should we have a camera watching us, everything we do? And then under the Freedom of Information Act, environmentalists get a hold of the camera data and any data, and then they twist it in, you know, know, in bad ways for us. So it, that,
why,
that part's kind of
why would they want a camera when they put observers on your boat? The observers would they be the first guys to tell them what they're doing right or wrong?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a mess. I got to tell you, you know, all of us that are on CCA are here trying to work with and trying to help keep promoting fishing. And you hear the horror stories of both the commercial side and the recreational side. It's just too bad.
Wendy, were you chiming in? Yeah, go, Wendy.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little skiff. Merritt and I have a little skiff. It's only 21 feet. If you can imagine all the safety gear that we have to have on that thing, plus the VMS, plus everything else. I mean, and then have an observer. That, well, during COVID, I don't know how we're going to do that because we can't be COVID compliant at 6 feet away from everybody. And then he'd be sitting downwind from us. So it's just a pain in the butt. It's California.
You know, Captain David, I was having difficulty getting four rolls of toilet paper at Costco during a lot of this. In fact, I'm even having difficulty. Were you having any difficulties supplying the guys in your fleet with all the things they needed to go on out for 6 or 8 weeks?
Yeah, well, we go out for about 4 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, 3 weeks. And, oh, the Albacore boats, yeah, they were going out. So what I was doing is I don't live that far from a Costco, so I'd go down and grab a roll, you know, grab a thing of paper towels, toilet paper, bleach, and stuff I need. And I was just putting it in my garage at the house so that when the boat came in, we weren't in a panic. Because when this first happened, we got caught with our pants down. Like, how do we get supplies? Clothes? Oh, you're only allowed one package of meat. You're only, you know, there's limits on everything. And it was. We just had to adjust for it. So we made the adjustments. So it didn't like stop a trip or anything, but it did make it difficult. I forget what it was a couple weeks ago. I was at Costco and I bought, bacon. And I bought four packs of bacon and I got up there and it was like the alarm went off. Oh, you can't get this. You can't get, what are you trying to do? And I said, four packs of bacon. Oh, you're only allowed one. I was like, what? You know, so there's this weird things that you wouldn't have seen, you know, that in like the toilet paper thing. Who would have ever thought we'd have a shortage of that for a coronavirus?
Crazy. Dave, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but kind of looking into the future, is commercial fishing under the U.S. flag, is that going to wane and we're going to become more and more dependent on foreign sources? Like Tommy loves to tell us that we may not be able to trust everything that we're putting in our mouth if we're buying from them.
Yeah, I think that the main thing is that people have to look at the big picture. And like I said, recreational and commercial guys have to work together. We have to understand that we're all out there sharing the resource. And if we're not using it, a foreign country can. So you have to remember, we'll throw bluefin out there because it's a very sore subject with me. The U.S. fleet's allowed, you know, 600 and some tons for 2 years, so 300 and some ton a year, basically. Mexico's allowed 6,000 tons. Japan's allowed 15,000 tons. And, you know, here we're the U.S., way bigger, and we're only allowed a tiny bit of it. And, you know, we have to learn to fight, and we fight together, not against each other, to protect U.S. rights in U.S. waters. And remember, if you don't have U.S. commercial fishermen catching your fish, you're going to be buying them from Mexicans, you know, from the, you know, China now is getting big fleets, Japan, and you're going to have to import it all in from New Zealand, Australia, you know, South American countries. So basically, you're actually hurting us by not having U.S. fish caught in U.S. waters being monitored by the, you know, by the U.S. government. And the government does need to slack off a little bit because, you know, if you notice, most of our fish stocks are doing pretty well. And, you know, they come after the commercial fishermen on marine mammals. But all of you that have been in the ocean see what our marine mammal populations are like. They've been exploding over the last 20 years.
Sure. So, Dave, let me get this right. The regulatory agency that is controlling what your take can be in U.S. waters is some type of a nebulous U.S. agency, and they put more restrictions on U.S. flag vessels than they do from vessels from other countries when it comes to how they can fish and the quotas that they can get. Am I correct? Is that a correct statement?
Our negotiators they go to meetings with Mexico, with Japan, with other countries, and they give away our stocks to these other countries. If you could imagine what they've done, I mean, you couldn't even, you know, it's terrible. I mean, U.S. is U.S. We have a lot, big population. We have a lot of water that's in our 200-mile zone. We have Hawaii, which takes up all kinds of water. And we should be allowed to catch our fair share. We should be allowed to catch as much as Japan or as much as Mexico of the same population of fish. But they all have higher quotas than we do. Now, how can that be? And I was in when this bluefin crash happened, whatever it was, like 8 years ago or whatever it was, when they lowered the limit to one or two fish and they were trying to lower it to zero. Environmentalists wanted no bluefin being taken in California. I was there working with our State Department, and I remember exactly, I was actually in the driving in Point Loma, and I had to stop because the cell sites are bad up there, listening to this, and I lost him for a minute. Then the guy came back. We got 500 tons, David. We got 500 or 600 tons. And I said, really, that's nothing. And his words were, Mexico and Japan wanted us to have zero. They offered us zero. And I said, well, yeah, that's what negotiators do. So, you know, I'll never forget that phone call. And, you know, since then, you know, the U.S. quota has been horrible.
Boy, I don't know. You know, Stan and Wendy, this should be an eye-opener to anyone that is out there, whether or not you're a fisherman or not a fisherman, on just what's happening to our proud industry and the men and women going out there trying to supply us with food that we have on our table every day. And not only that, taking it out of our own waters from our own people, not allowing our own people to go in there and regulating them. So I don't even know where to go with this. This is incredible, David. Thank you for opening our eyes. I guess my question is, how can we help, or can we?
Well, I think just supporting U.S. commercial fishermen and having it, you know, where it's not the sport fishermen fighting the, you know, we all need to stick together now because we have some, you know, just crazy, you know, NGO organizations, you know, just some of this like Oceana and Pew, and there's just, you know, that National Biodiversity or whatever they call themselves that sue all the time. And, you know, they're, you know, it's bad. So I just, you know, just, I think we need to stick together. And, you know, that's basically all I can say. Our fish stocks are looking really good. I mean, our oceans are looking good. And I always tell people to tell me that there's overfishing or we were killing all the marine mammals. I said, have you been in the ocean? Because, all of you have been in the ocean. And do you see where the oceans in California? Now, I can't speak for other areas. I can just speak for California right now because that's where, you know, I'm based out of. I'm really proud and happy from what I see out there and, you know, the life that I see in the waters off of California.
Well, Dave, I know we're not going to solve this tonight, but I can't thank you enough for spending some time to talk to us about this subject. And all we can do is tell people, look at the labels, read what it is that you're eating, and try to buy U.S. as much as you can. And David, tell us again, where can we find you in the next couple of weeks where you will be selling your wares?
We're going to be selling at Driscoll's probably down in San Diego on Friday, and then we're going to be selling at Tuna Harbor Dockside Market on Saturday and probably at Driscoll's also. They're calling for some rain, so we'll just have to see how that works out for us. And we do, you can follow on Facebook, Hayworth Fishing on Facebook, and then we also have HaywarthFish.com. where we do deliveries and some pre-orders. Because what we started doing during the pandemic is doing home deliveries around San Diego. And so that's been working out good. And then we started working with feeding families and getting fish out to lower income. We didn't get a chance to talk about that for lower income families in San Diego. So really excited about that.
Well, David, and what's fresh on the dock right now or this coming week, do you think?
This week we have a lot of big eye tuna coming in and yellowfin tuna, and we have a fair amount of monchong are going to be on the boat this trip, and we have a small amount of okra coming in. So that's what we got coming in for this week.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us. Good luck to you. And we look forward to checking in with you in the future to see how things are going after this is all over, okay?
Yeah, well, thank you, and thanks for letting me vent.
You
aren't tied
up, you know. All right.
You know, that was great, David. I can't thank you enough.
Okay. Thank you.
Great stuff.
Well, that's the show for tonight, everyone. Thank you for listening. On behalf of Stan and Wendy, we want to invite you to come back next Sunday night to AM 540 at 5:05 p.m. for another live edition of Rod and Reel Radio. And so until then, I want to thank Otto and the AM 540 studios, Ben Harvey, our local producer, and always in memory of Big Tuna Bill, Eddie McCune, and Mr. Paul Leader from El Cajon Ford to help keep us on the air all these many years. So until next Sunday night, if you get a chance, go out there and go fishing. You're letting someone else catch your fish. Your fish are getting away. Good night, everyone. We're out for now. Just a wishing.